A Walmart in El Paso, Texas. An entertainment district in Dayton, Ohio. A food festival in Gilroy, California. A government office in Virginia Beach. And also, a newspaper in Annapolis, Maryland. A warehouse in Aberdeen, Maryland. A granite shop in Edgewood, Maryland. Mass shootings continue to be a terrifying prospect in America. And each time a person opens fire in a school, a workplace, a festival, or a Walmart, politicians inevitably make promises to crack down on the availability of guns. But often those promises fall flat. Congress hasn't passed significant gun control legislation in years. At the state level, however, gun control advocates have found more success. After the murder of 20 children and 6 adults in Sandy Hook in 2012, Maryland lawmakers passed a sweeping bill that bans most assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. And more recently, Maryland enacted a red flag program that enables authorities to temporarily take away guns from individuals who might hurt themselves or others. But after 2 mass workplace shootings in Annapolis and Aberdeen in 2018, there were more promises in Maryland, but no new laws were passed. Did the latest mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton change the debate over gun control and gun rights in Maryland? Or are mass shootings such a regular occurrence that they no longer spark lawmakers to make changes? This is Roughly Speaking, Newsroom Edition, the flagship podcast of the Baltimore Sun, sharing stories about our city and our state that you can't find anywhere else. I'm Pamela Wood. Thank you for joining us. To explore the current landscape of gun control and gun rights debate in Maryland, I'm joined today by my colleague from the State House, Luke Broadwater. Luke and I work together to cover gun issues and legislation in Annapolis. Luke, thanks for being here.
Good morning, Pam.
So, Luke, each time there is a mass shooting, we hear politicians in other states propose gun control laws. And many of these proposals are already the law of the land here in Maryland. Let's run down some of the ones we already have, starting with the red flag laws. Tell me how that works.
Yes. So the red flag law went into effect about a year ago. And Maryland's has been, I think by most people's estimation, one of the toughest and most frequently used in the country. Right now, we're seeing somewhere between about 80 and 100 petitions filed per month. And these are instances where somebody is concerned about a loved one or a family member who they think is displaying indications of perhaps violence. And so they are able to go to a judge and get their guns temporarily taken from them.
I know the way the program works, though, is that there is the opportunity for the gun owner to petition to get their guns back. It's not a permanent seizure of their weapons, right?
Sheriff Popkin from Montgomery County, who's been heading this up, has said that they frequently go in and take people's guns. Lots of times this is preventing suicides. And then when the person is able to maybe get some counseling or get some medication and they're in a different place mentally, they're able to get their guns back. And he said in the first 3 months, they actually had 4 threats against schools in
Wow.
which they got orders to take people's guns. So that was, you know, a threat against a school a month in Maryland. And that's, you know, I think that's a pretty scary statistic. And so he says he believes 100% it saved people's lives this year alone.
And now that red flag law is something that's being spoken about in other states in these latest shootings. Now, it was passed here just last year, 2018, and that came in the wake of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shooting down in Florida. And that was one actually supported by Governor Larry Hogan. He put that forward even as a Republican, generally not in favor of gun control. He supported that one. So we had, in addition to red flag law, we had another law, right?
Yes. Also in 2018, Maryland banned bump stocks, which people say turn a semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon. And that was in response to the mass shooting in Las Vegas at that country music concert where 58 people were killed.
And then another one, probably the biggest law change in Maryland in response to a mass shooting, came in 2013. That was right after the 2012 murders at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut. Right after that, Maryland lawmakers passed the Maryland Firearms Safety Act of 2013, which is basically a state-level assault weapons ban.
That's right. That bill was pushed by Brian Frosch, who at the time was a state senator. Now he, of course, is the attorney general. and he had proposed an assault weapons ban for years and finally got the momentum after Sandy Hook. He's now defending the law, or has defended the law in court against challenges from Second Amendment groups.
Yeah, and this is a complex bill. It's like 60-some pages long, but the key elements are dozens of makes and models of assault weapons are banned in Maryland. It also bans magazines that have more than 10 rounds, and it sets up a licensing system for all types of handguns known as the Handgun Qualification License, or HQL, that involves fingerprints, a criminal records check, and a firearm safety course for anybody who wants to get a license to own a handgun. Now, Luke, you've talked to a delegate who thinks there's a hole in the assault weapons ban. Can you tell me about that?
Yes. So when Maryland passed the assault weapons ban several years ago, there was a long list of guns, as you mentioned, that are banned in Maryland. You can't buy. But there is one version of the AR-15 that is not on that list. And Delegate Julian Ivey from Prince George's County, a freshman and actually the youngest member of the House, has proposed banning that gun as well. That's the AR-15 Sporter H-Bar. I hope I'm saying that right for all you.
I believe you've got it.
Yes. So, you know, he doesn't see any reason why this should be legal when the other ones are illegal. And he put in this bill this year, but he didn't get a co-sponsor in the Senate. And so that sat in a drawer and didn't really go anywhere. He expects to reintroduce it again next year.
And now in talking with Attorney General Frosch, in recent hours, we've learned there may be another gap in the assault weapons ban. Our colleague Ian Duncan heard from Frosch that the type of gun used in the Dayton mass shooting is kind of a combination of an assault rifle with a pistol grip. And some people believe that that's designed to get around assault weapons bans. And Frosch tells us he believes that that would be legal to purchase here in Maryland. So I imagine we could also see in the 2020 session an effort to add that type of gun to the assault weapons ban. So we'll be watching for those.
Another proposal that's on the table is background checks for private sales of long guns.
Yes. Yeah, so in Maryland, you have to get a background check if you're buying a handgun or if you're buying a rifle or shotgun from a licensed dealer. But if an individual is selling a rifle or shotgun to another individual, no background check required. So we had a proposal in the legislature in 2019 that would have required two individuals in a private sale would have had to go to a dealer and have them conduct a background check. The idea is to pop up if there's any disqualifying criminal history that would make it that you can't buy a gun.
That's right. And this was an intense debate during the past General Assembly session. We often saw members of the Moms Demand group. In their red T-shirts rallying for the bill and testifying for it. And on the other side, we saw members of the Patriot Picket in their white T-shirts opposing the bill.
Yeah, there was a lot of focus on this bill, and it made it pretty far, but it didn't pass. The House of Delegates passed a version, and they sent it over to the Senate, where it got changed a lot. Negotiations went down to the final hours. I was texting with lawmakers to see if they'd worked it out, but clock hit midnight, and they did not pass a bill.
I saw a lot of people blaming Senator Bobby Zirkin on social media about this. Is he to blame? How did this go down? Why didn't this pass?
So my understanding is it passed the House of Delegates, and then Senator Bobby Zirkin of Baltimore County, Democrat, he's chairman of the Senate Judicial Proceedings Committee. So he's in charge of that committee. His committee changed up the details. It's pretty nuanced, but they changed the details of the bill pretty significantly. And he moved out of his committee very late in the session. And gun control advocates, the Moms Demand Action folks and others, thought that he was kind of slow walking the bill and then changed it to a way that was untenable, which effectively caused a demise. So they have been out for Senator Zirkin. They blame him for the failure. So he's taken a lot of heat for that, fairly or unfairly. But I'll certainly be interested to see if Senator Zirkin and the House sponsor, Delegate Vanessa Atterbury, did they work together to like get a bill passed and figure it out early in session? Or do we have a repeat of this debate next year?
Yeah, I expect we'll see a version of the long gun background check bill come up again. And we'll be seeing, we'll be watching to see if the lawmakers can iron it out this time.
Yeah. I'll be interested as well to see if Governor Larry Hogan gets involved. You know, in recent days, actually, his staff keeps telling me again that the governor supports universal background checks. Now, does that mean federal universal background checks, which is probably not going to happen? Or would he support more background checks in Maryland? He did not come out on the long gun background checks bill last year. Certainly that would effectively make almost universal background checks in Maryland. But he stayed on the sidelines. So we'll see if he changes at all next year.
Yeah, the governor has tried to walk this line between not offending the Second Amendment supporters and also enacting some gun control legislation. You know, his office likes to say that he has signed every gun control bill that reached his desk, but we've never heard him, you know, come down and testify for a bill or really throw his weight behind something. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, well, and as a Republican, part of his base is gun ownership supporters, the Second Amendment advocates, and they are not shy about speaking up when they think the governor or anybody else has taken a vote or a position that is against the Second Amendment.
The effort to abolish the Handgun Permit Review Board is more than an attack on the board. It is an attack on law-abiding citizens who are simply seeking to defend themselves and following the lawful process to do so. Marylanders seeking a handgun permit deserve. You're a disgrace. You give people 1 minute and you show up late. To effectively abolish it is to deserve a fair process.
So that clip was from a hearing about whether to get rid of the Handgun Permit Review Board. Now, that's a board that hears appeals when people who have concealed carry permits want restrictions on when they can carry to be dropped or if folks were denied a concealed carry permit. So it's been quite a controversial issue. And in that clip, you hear Shari Judah, who is a former board member, getting hauled out by a state trooper after she ran over her allotted time and refused to stop yelling her testimony. I was there and recorded that clip. I was a few feet away, and it was pretty intense.
And at least once, a Patriot Picket member got removed from an observation balcony after yelling during a House of Delegates floor session. So that was another time when passions ran high and people had to be removed.
Yeah, there certainly are a lot of passions on both sides of this issue, and really there's a lot at stake. Now, one more thing. We hear a lot of talk about, hey, Maryland has really strict gun laws, but we have such pervasive gun violence in Maryland, particularly in Baltimore City.
We are sick and tired of being penalized for Baltimore City's inability to control crime. And we've got your back, and my closing arguments will be, if these bills passed, we will not comply.
Luke, what's going on with that?
Well, yeah, I think there's a couple of things at play. I think that we perhaps do have tough gun laws in Maryland in comparison to other U.S. states, but, you know, not necessarily compared to other countries in the first world. The issue with gun violence is especially in Baltimore, is much more centered because it's a city as opposed to a rural area. Yes, you don't have strict gun laws in places like Wyoming and more rural parts of the country, and you have fewer murders there. But there also aren't people clustered together in huge cities with a thriving drug trade. So I also think it's perhaps a bit wrong to say that the gun laws are super strict in Baltimore. I mean, it's not even a felony to have illegal possession of a gun right now. So that's just a misdemeanor. So the police chief the former police chief tried to get that changed. It was unsuccessful. So there's a number of things that could be done to make gun laws tougher. And I don't know if it's necessarily true that, you know, our gun laws are so much stricter than the rest of the world.
Yeah, and you can look at it kind of on two ends of it. One is punishment for improper use of guns. As you noted, it's a misdemeanor to have an illegal gun. Governor Hogan has promoted some enhanced sentences for repeat violent offenders who use guns. That's on the punishment end. A lot of these bills we're talking about are on the access end, on the front end, trying to limit who can own a gun, who can buy a gun. Of course, the argument is that if you want to get a gun, you'll find a way to get a gun. And I think that's perhaps often what happens in Baltimore City. The folks in the drug trade, you know, in neighborhood crews or gangs who seek to protect themselves, they're not necessarily going to a store and buying their gun.
Right. And there was a crackdown, I think it was last year or the year before, where they busted someone from Tennessee who had brought in a bunch of illegal guns for that ended up in being used in crimes. And these are guns that are not illegal by definition, so like on this list of banned assault weapons, but are illegally possessed by people who have criminal records, which is a crime.
Right. And then we also have the issue of every state has different gun laws. They're sort of a patchwork from state to state. And what you could buy perhaps legally in one state may be illegal to own in Maryland. And that's a way people get around it.
Right. So I think it's a little bit more complex than just, you know, lines on social media. But that's why I expect that we'll see more action this General Assembly session.
Yeah. And as with most things, the reality of these policy discussions is much more complex and nuanced than what comes out in a tweet or a Facebook post. So we will continue watching this. Luke, thank you for coming in and talking with me about it.
Thanks for having me.
And that's this week's Roughly Speaking Newsroom Edition. Thank you for joining us. For more audio from the Baltimore Sun, visit baltimoresun.com/roughlyspeaking or find us wherever you get your podcasts. And as we always say, as times change, the need for quality journalism doesn't. So please consider subscribing to the Baltimore Sun at baltimoresun.com/subscribe. For producers Hallie Miller and Steve Early, thanks again, and we'll see you next time.